of new stock in 1991, absent absolute prohibition on alienation, should be amended to direct that such provisions become effective 20 years following total transfer of lands awarded to native corporate ownership and control. This seemingly having been the purpose intent of Congress in the first place. While the Alaska Federation of Natives Incorporated draft 1991 resolution 84-02 addresses the need to keep the stock restrictions in place, it fails to recognize or deal with their legal obligation to declare cash value on stocks or the resulting effects on native ownership thereof. When in 1991 the native corporations declare a cash value on stocks, the amount declared will or could raise native shareholders above the federal poverty level, accordingly leaving them above or not within the requirements for recipients of state and federally funded public assistance programs such as health, education, and welfare, while reducing the amount in Social Security, Medicaid, and other senior citizen benefits accorded to our elders. With this concern in mind, it becomes easy to conclude that absent full ownership of all lands awarded, the native corporate structures have failed to complete the development and growth cycle required to meet the standards envisioned by Congress in 1991, which will result in a lesser cash value of stock, a continued small cash amount in dividend payment to shareholders, and with a strong possibility of forcing many natives shareholders to sell their stocks to avoid continued poverty, if only temporarily. Today, and possibly in 1991, we are a nation of natives seemingly rich in land and corporate structure ownership, but as a people we are poor and always dependent on our land, without which we cannot walk upon or stand tall above, as we have done in the past, and without which we will become extinct in the concerns of the society within which we reside. To avoid such a possibility and to bring about a prosperous future for all Native peoples and the state of Alaska as well, I humbly ask that the message herein directed to your attention be viewed and considered with the same concerns in which it has been delivered. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, thank you very much. When you say that you wrote to the governor, that was about the D2 lands, I take it.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was following a widely publicized, highly notarized issue on the D2 lands issue, the imposition of the Antiquities Act, many measures that has been taken to delay the transfer of land from federal governments to native corporations, and as I have always seen it, the lands were provided not to make us rich, but as a foundation for the development and growth of the corporations, which hopefully would make us at least richer than what we were prior to the 1971 Land Claim Settlement Act. Without the land, the corporations are basically helpless. The land was to be the foundation. With the land, we could have used it as a collateral for investment. Without the collateral, our investments have been limited. Without the land, monies that we've had for investment have been utilized not properly for investment, but to fight for land, hiring attorneys, traveling back and forth to Washington, D.C., money that that should have been used to invest for corporate development and growth has been mishandled and misutilized to fight for land, which we should not have been required to fight for, but which had already been awarded to us under the Land Claim Settlement Act. So our development and growth has been reduced because of the need to fight for land which was awarded. It's not making sense. I became aware of this, and my suggestion to petition Congress for redress of grievance is just one of many steps we could take. I offer it not as a total solution, but as a process to look into, because if two Native groups have already used it successfully, I don't see why we should say it's useless for us to attempt.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Malott. Thank you very much. I had a glance at that, yeah. Thank you.
My name is Father Jim Lodwin. I'm a Jesuit priest. At present, I am employed by the Archdiocese of Anchorage and working with Native ministry in the Archdiocese. I've been doing this since 1982. I came to Alaska in the fall of 1964 and was assigned by my Jesuit superiors to Monroe High School, where I did counseling and teaching and was also principal there. My first experience with Alaskan Natives, and joyfully, was in Fairbanks, though unfortunately we had very few Native students at the Monroe High School. One summer in 65, I was assigned to Alakanuk and Amanuk on the Bering Sea coast. And my first experience there, as I landed on the plane, got off the plane, was to walk through the village, and I had my collar up, and so my Roman collar at that time wasn't showing. And some children were playing with a story knife and telling their tales, and as I walked by, I stopped to look down to see what they were drawing. And they looked up at me and they said, "Gussick, Gussick." And as I bent over, they saw my Roman collar. And they said, "Father." And I said, "Yes, Gussick, Father." I spent 3 months there that summer. And for me, it was an opportunity to become partially acculturated, to appreciate the Yupiks there, the impact of Catholicism on their lives, some of the bad influences. And it gave me an opportunity to recognize that I needed to listen to where they were. After my experience at Monroe High School, I was assigned in 1978 to Hooper Bay, Alaska. My experience was somewhat the same, that in many respects, our Catholic faith had been imposed upon the people by our missionaries. Perhaps in good faith, but always imposed in a way that did not recognize cultural values and spiritual inheritance. And for 2 years there, I tried to listen, especially to the elders. I learned some of the wonderful aspects of shamanism and the fact that when the church could not always respond to their needs, they could turn to their shamans and to their original beliefs. In 1970, I was assigned as administrator of St. Mary's High School, where I remained for 11 years. At that time, I was doing a religious studies program at Seattle University and wrote a paper on religious education in an Eskimo culture. In reviewing that over the years, the question that I constantly return to in 11 years at St. Mary's is, what are we educating our students for? We had both Eskimo and Athabascan and Inupiat students present while I was there. It was a time of great impact of oil, of native land claims, and cultural revolution in the villages. And to respond to these needs was really a difficult task. We tried to set up a course for our native students to deal with the land claims and with ANCSA. We invited Chilista Corporation members to come out and speak to our students and found really that they, like us, were not really prepared for the educational task that was before them. And even though over those years we had a program to educate our students, still from sitting in upon Native meetings and seeing the development of the village corporations, I personally felt that there was never a real understanding of what was going on, nor did I feel that so many people really understood the corporate structure, which even for me was difficult to understand. I don't know if ANCSA or the state or the educational system of Alaska could provide the education necessary. I think for me, the important thing that happened in my life was to begin to listen to the people themselves, to share their concerns, to try to understand their culture and the rich spiritual heritage that they had to offer me and to offer all of Alaskan citizens. There are so many times I feel that we do not listen, and there was never provided, and certainly our school is guilty of this, a vehicle where we could listen to what they were trying to say to us. I spent 11 years at St. Mary's. It made me aware of the rich Judeo-Christian background that I come from, but I could never impose it on another culture, but only could share it. But I couldn't even do that until I began to understand and realize the rich cultural tradition of the Yupik people, the Athabascan people, and the Inupiats that I came into contact with. And when I look at the issues that have surfaced over the years since ANCSA, I think the most important factor to recognize when we consider subsistence or land or alternate approaches to native government and self-determination, we must see the spiritual heritage and spiritual roots out of which these things came to be. I don't think that ANCSA or any corporate structure today can respond to all the needs of our beautiful native people today. I think that there needs to be a tremendous support system. And I would hope that the mistakes made by our earlier missionaries may be corrected today by those of us who support our Native brothers and sisters. I am encouraged by the statements made by our Holy Father, Pope John Paul, both in Alaska last spring in Fairbanks, and this past fall to the Native populations in Canada, that we would look at them as a people who have rights to land and subsistence, that have rights as individuals, that we'd see that we must support and strengthen their claims, that they may live out a choice of life that they make, that we not impose upon them something that may have worked for us, or structures that they do not understand or feel comfortable in, that we may bring to them the riches of our own spiritual heritage and our cultures, which are so varied, but not impose them in any way. I think, if anything, though these areas are important to consider, we do need to listen. We do need to hear what the elders are saying. It's been a real joy for me and a privilege to work in the past 2 years in an urban setting and to see what an impact the elders' conferences and the spiritual movement is making on the Native community in Alaska. And I feel that we must support this in whatever way we can. I do not think that any one of us can respond to all the needs. But I do feel that as a community of care and concern, that we can pledge our support, that we can respond to the needs, but we must listen to one another. and especially be sensitive to what the elders are saying today. I think if we can listen, we can find ways and means to provide the support necessary to assure a future that is built upon the traditions of the past, that can accept changes, but not exploit even one individual. What has impressed me in the last 2 years has been the ecumenical thrust of the Anchorage community to respond to Native needs. There are many, many churches in the Anchorage area that have Native outreach programs who now wish to work with present realities, both the corporate structure on regional and village terms, but to work with them to assure that the future for all of our Native brothers and sisters, even those who were born after 1971, a future that can be a sign of hope for all of us. I appreciate what the Berger Commission has offered to our Native peoples throughout the state. I hope that the results of this report may really impact all of us, that we may take a responsibility for one another and for our future in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Father Lodwin. Might I just ask you a question? You said that you were at St. Mary's for 11 years, that must have been fairly recently, in the 70s.
70 to 81.
Yeah. And you asked yourself, what are we educating these students for? I was wondering what answer you gave when you put that question. I'm thinking especially of students from the villages where... Mm-hmm. It is my view, and this would apply to all the circumpolar countries, the villages in the Arctic and subarctic regions, it seems to me, are never going to offer wage and salaried employment that is anything comparable to what people normally expect in places like Anchorage or any city in the lower 48. In the school in that decade, were they really being educated? I appreciate that education is for life, but insofar as it bears on work-a-day tasks, were they being educated to as if they were going to enter a world where there was wage and salaried employment for everybody? That's a dilemma, I think, faced throughout these northern countries. And
I think we had to look at it from a couple different standpoints. At Monroe High School, where I was, it was predominantly white high school. It was college-oriented.
That's here in town.
It was in Fairbanks.
Fairbanks.
Monroe Catholic. When I came to St. Mary's, the program there was secondary program. I think what we tried to do was to respond to the needs of the students as we found them there. We had a small number of students who went on to college with the hope of professional careers, many of them hoping perhaps to return to their village setup. We also had a responsibility, I felt, to the students who would return to their village Native village, and there would find, you know, a culture that was changing from totally subsistent culture to both a subsistent and economic culture. And though we were constantly wrestling with this question through the 11 years that I was there, I don't know that it was ever answered. I was in St. Mary's after the first of this year. I find that many of the students coming there now are coming not so much for an education, but to get away from either a home situation that is intolerable or sometimes a village situation that is difficult for them to live in. The impact of drugs and alcohol on the village scene is very detrimental to growth and development. The other thing that I felt was that even though we had educated a student, when they went back to the village, it was usually their choice, first of all, that they came for education, but they went home to a village that maybe did not understand where they had come from then. They were an educated student, sometimes had lost some of their own native skills, subsistence skills, and that. And so the question of alienation and isolation, I think, is not only a question for that decade, but even for our present decade. And I don't know that we have found the answer yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's, I think that ANCSA has assisted in bringing a measure of employment to those villages. The trouble is that in geography and climate and everything else militates against anything approaching full employment in the ordinary sense, and yet often we find that school curricula are developed on the footing that these are people who are going to take their place in a world of full employment and middle class aspirations, and some of them will, but a lot won't. I just wondered if you had ever managed to square that particular circle. I guess not.
I don't think successfully. I think that we tried to bring in special education programs and to respond to these kinds of needs, but limited resources. I think one of the best things we did was when we began to bring in Native leaders and people to teach Eskimo and Native skills, especially for students that would return to the village. And we were able to do that through some state and federal grants, which were beneficial. But there are still those students today who I feel do look to high school as a preparation for college, and we do have a pretty good track record of students who've graduated from high school and have gone on to college and are in professional fields today.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm sure. Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Aloha. My name is Bill Kaiana. I'm in Nupia Dina Hawaii Ao, which inadequately translates to Eskimo Indian Hawaiian. I have been living with and trying to fathom the stress the land claims transition has brought on all of us for many years. I was raised in a village of 30 people. I have traveled most of the world and feel comfortable in a city of 2 million quite well. But the village is firmly planted in me, and I refuse to let that go for want of anything. I was adopted by white people, especially by my Caucasian mother, who was Conrad Hilton's first cousin. She and Conrad were raised by the grandfather who had initially established the Hilton Hotel chain. What I am leading to is that, unlike my native cousins, I was raised by a person who was exposed to generations of Anglo business concepts and practices. I was raised in a real estate business environment. Therefore, at a very early age, I had realized what was going on with my people. The United States simply did a real estate transaction. I had later learned that the transaction was fraudulently implemented. Due process was ignored. The so-called young and eager leaders, in their own excitement and greed, said they represented us and accepted the land claims on our behalf. I do not accept the Land Claim Settlement Act. I do not recognize it. And the only way that I would recognize it as a beginning of a series of steps within the reawakening of our people. Our people have been wronged. The answers must come from our people in what directions that they themselves want to go. Our sovereignty will be the answer, insofar as protection of our rights on an international basis. It is the fiduciary responsibility for the United States of America to adhere to our sovereignty. One of the biggest fallacies of the corporation framework is that the corporations are the law of the people. This is not so. And ultimately, the responsibility of what goes on with our land must be decided by the tribal governments of each area. I had served on a nonprofit corporation, the Fairbanks Native Association. I was voted on by more votes than anybody. I resigned, or actually, I didn't even bother to go ahead and put in a written or oral resignation. I walked away from the board when I realized that it was simply an assimilation machine for the benefit of the state and the multinationals. I feel at times we are in a war, a cold war. We are separated by so-called existing boundaries, one between the Eskimos of Russia and America, and two, the Eskimos and the Indians of America and Canada, and even it extends on to Greenland and the rest of the world. Regardless, the Aboriginal people of each and every part of the world have valid existing rights, which must not be denied due to the wants of the multinationals. I am very grateful to go on record with this statement. At this time, I, as a sovereign, reprimand Alaska Federation of Natives for creating the cloud, stating that they represent my wants, needs, and directions that I may wish to take. The Alaska Federation of Natives does not represent me or mine. The present and past board of AFN has proved itself to be no more than a bunch of drug dealers and money grubbers.
I don't see any point in going on in that way, Mr. Kayana. I don't think that kind of personal attack is appropriate. So, but I certainly am eager to hear the rest of your submission.
Sovereignty is the key to the door which will give us the access to our land. Our rights to sovereignty has not been relinquished. We are alive and well and not about to go away. Spirituality has been brought up today. Thank you. What made me realize on my own self in my nativeness was not stocks in a corporation, but when I went into art training. Our people were right on in expressing their nature through their arts. What will save us as a people is our spirits, not stocks. The stocks makes us too vulnerable through alienation. The spirit will stay, and we will be strong. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Yes, sir.
I thank you for this privilege, and I want to express to you that I think there are a lot of both natives and non-natives alike throughout the state who are anxious and waiting for the reports that you will bring up. I think you have the key to a lot of the problems that were created since ANCSA, or we can go back a little farther to time of statehood. I think you have the key to the answers, or at least you will have, and you will be knowledgeable to present most of the major problems to the United States Congress. I was at the Nome Elders Conference last week, and the theme there was important traditional values for future. I love that theme. As I look through or stop and look at that tradition again, it stirred my mind. I don't think I ever really realized the value of tradition before, or I don't think I have traced it as I should have. So when I looked into the definition of the dictionary, I found that the tradition is something that has been carried down unwritten from ages. So that's just exactly what the theme was. You know, one of the basic things that was mentioned, it has been mentioned in the other meeting over there too, is alcoholism. By the way, doctor claimed that I am an alcoholic. In listening to the young people who are concerned about this, points to me that some of our younger generation, our elders in this field of problem. I'm not going to hide what I am, but rather I'd like to encourage those who are working to find solution to this problem. And another thing that seemed to be outstanding in that conference was the only resources that we are fighting for are our generation. And a lot of them call them afterborn, or those that were born after 1971 or after the enactment of ANCSA. So in thinking these over, it come to my mind, there seemed to be just one basic answer to this reaction of the problems that has been created, the fear. People are in fear, and rightly so, I think, because from that time when I was growing up, there's been a lot of disappointment. And after I grew up, I want you to know that I have been around white people. And sometimes it hurts me when there is too many pros or too many cons, or vice versa. Because let me state that we must get along. We must find workable solution to not only what is being reviewed now, because not only us need to learn to live with people and the leaders. It's not easy to lead people, that I know, although I'm no longer a leader now. And the thing we need to know then is to get together and find a constructive, workable solution. And sometimes it takes a lot of hard work and even breaking relationship, friendship, and so forth to get the results on the favorable side of life. You see, in looking this over, in any matter, there's always two sides. But the more I look at this problem, it seems it's a three-dimensional. You can take up to three-dimensional views on the problem. By that I mean there are people who look at it just on the benefits or the better livelihood of our people, the native people. There are others who look at it on the other side of the coin, that we're whites, we're not prejudiced, but we want things our way too. We don't want natives to run it. And yet there's the third one. I've known a lot of white people, and some of the Eskimos or native people that seems to be riding in between. And I don't know, I could be wrong, but I think this should not be overlooked. I think we need all three dimensions to solve the problems and to find a workable solution. In closing, I'd like to state that our generation of today find themselves in a noisy world. It's not like the time when I was growing up. The school system has changed. Even the churches have changed. You take a look, seems like most of the churches are run by the audience. A lot of people, I might be wrong again on this, but I say a lot of people or a lot of preachers are preaching only what their audience want to hear. They are afraid. What I'm trying to get at is, even at home, things have changed so much. I've been into some homes where little tots are the big bosses. That's not right. Where the government begins or where leadership begins is right at home. Home is the base of everything. And I think one of the main things that's even more important is the love of the mother, the love of the father. So if we love our children and their children's children, we must tell them to discipline them. It may hurt the little toddler for a while, because if we don't do that, one day when they grow up, they're going to be the big bosses. They're going to be the governor of the house. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Katchatang. Thank you. Well, this might be a good time to take a break for coffee, so we'll stretch our legs for a few minutes. Thanks to all of those who spoke this afternoon, and we'll break for 10 minutes for coffee then.